They're very, very depressing to be around, and their energy really zaps you because they tell you how horrible life is and how it's been for them, and they try to make you feel sorry for them, but they have no interest in any advice that you may have for them. They prefer to wallow in their self-pity, and they're certain that the world has done them in and that everybody's done them wrong. Nothing ever goes right for them. Maybe it's because they always see the glass as half empty rather than half full. They blame everyone but themselves when anything goes wrong. And they're very, very inadequate in their lives. They feel that life is unfair. They're also perpetual worriers, and they make up scenarios. For example, they know that they'll have a hard time at a party and that nobody will talk to them and that everything will go wrong before they even step into the house. So oftentimes it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that they project. After you've been around this gloom and doom victim, you may start to become depressed and exhausted. You'll either feel like crying or going to sleep when you're around them. Any advice you give them is futile. You have to remember that, because they'll always answer you with, yeah, but, yeah, but. They're yeah, but people. The smiling, two-faced backstabber. With friends like these, you certainly don't need enemies. These are the kind of people that'll borrow your pot, and then they'll cook your goose, so to speak. They'll roll out the carpet for you one day, and then pull it out from under you the next. They're very scary people. Nothing hurts more than to learn that you've been betrayed by someone you once trusted. These people are extremely passive-aggressive. They smile hypocritically and pretend to be your best friend while sneaking behind your back and then stabbing you. These chameleon-like toxic people are really frightening because they change depending on what they think that you need to hear. They step on your toes to get ahead. They'll be willing to do whatever it takes to get whatever they want. They're very evasive, and they won't tell you what's on their mind. They won't tell you what's going on in their mind either. In this way, they're like the gossip. The wishy-washy wimp. These are the people that have the guts of a skeleton, so to speak. They're passive-aggressive. And they're spineless wonders. They really lack a backbone. They bend in whatever direction the wind is blowing and have difficulty making any decision. Oftentimes, they're quiet and agreeable, and at first they seem very likable. They're very much like yes men and yes women. However, in reality, their yeses mean no's. They may say one thing one day and the opposite thing the next day. In fact, they don't really know what they're doing, nor does anyone else around them, which makes them extremely difficult and frustrating to work with. They lack inner substance and are unwilling to stick up for anything or anybody, including themselves. They think that if they stall long enough, their problems will go away or the decisions will be made by themselves. They waste time because they're so insecure about their abilities that they can never take the risk of being wrong. When they're forced into a decision-making process, they get very, very angry. The wishy-washy wimp is very paralyzed by fear and anxiety, so much so that they can't even make a move if there's pressure to perform. Even an action to save another person's life might be avoided by this type of person. They can't handle frustration or confrontation. They see themselves as victims, like the gloom and doom victim. So they never want to make waves or cause any trouble, but they seek comfort in crawling into the woodwork of life. The opportunistic user. Oh, they're always around when they need you. They're the human gimme pig. That means give me. Give me, give me. That's their middle name. They're very much out for themselves. They're out for themselves alone. They're fair-weather friends who only want you in their life when it's convenient for them, when they can benefit. These people will do anything to get ahead, and I mean anything. If they can't benefit from someone or have benefited all they can, they discard the person like a used paper towel without a second thought. The bitchy, bossy bully. When they want your opinion, oh, they'll give it to you all right. They're verbal terrorists. They're loud, obnoxious, rude, demanding, stubborn know-it-alls whose motto is, my way or the highway. They're explosive and volatile. They fly off the handle in an instant, and they're happy only when they're running the show. They're turned on by emotionally devouring you and spitting you out. These are people who give other people ulcers. They give other people heart attacks. They're the classic emotional abuser, and they win the prize for being the most hated by the most people. Confucius' teachings confirm this. Most often, no one will obey the bully, even if he gives orders. Even though they're feared and hated, they won't be respected. The jokester. They never take anything seriously. They start everything out with, "Hey, did you hear the latest one about such and such?" They'll often take pot shots at you by using sarcasm, sarcastic humor, by pretending that these verbal barbs are simply pleasantries and they're only kidding. They react to your disdain by saying, "Don't you have a sense of humor? Everyone else laughs at this. What's wrong with you?" Their humor can be a weapon implementing their underlying hostility towards you. For example, let's say you're eating breakfast and someone says to you, "Here, have another sweet roll. You wear it well," implying that you're fat. When you register surprise, they may giggle and say, "Hey, can't you take a joke? I was only kidding." They're indirectly hostile towards you because they're too cowardly to tell you outright what bothers them about you. Whenever you want to discuss something seriously with them, they giggle or they joke about it because serious topics are way too difficult for them to deal with. Even if you get angry at them, it's always greeted with an inevitable laugh because they can't cope with honest emotions. It's just way too painful for them. When they're upset about something, they'll never let you know it. They'll disguise their hurt feelings and even their antagonism towards you in wisecracks. So they'll construct a rather protective shell of banter around themselves. In reality, these people are very insecure and have very low self-esteem. They want so much to be liked and accepted that they feel that they have to earn your acceptance by, in essence, performing for you. In fact, a lot of people may like the jokester or the kidder, but nobody takes them seriously. The unconscious social klutz. It's not that they don't have the presence of mind, they just have an absence of thought. They always stop to think, but the trouble is they forget to start thinking again. They have no clue they're dense clods who are totally unaware of themselves or their surroundings, and they'll often make rude comments without any regard for your feelings. They usually have poor eye contact, poor posture, poor handshakes, poor intonation, poor social graces. In essence, they're unevolved creatures, kind of like a four-year-old. They're not conscious of your feelings. They'll blurt out whatever they're thinking. They'll say the wrong thing at the wrong moment, even if they happen to be intelligent or good at their job. They're just devoid of social graces. Oftentimes, the unconscious social klutz is a stranger, somebody you don't even know that'll come up to you and say something bizarre or out of line that'll leave you wondering, how could anybody say something like that? Well, you better believe it. They said it. They're always saying things like that. The mental case. This is a very serious type of toxic person, and being around them is nerve-wracking and downright frightening. They're mentally and emotionally disturbed people. Mental cases often have psychosis. They have schizophrenia or manic depression or bipolar disorder. They may have borderline personality disorders that can threaten their own lives as well as the lives of others. They may even have alcohol or drug problems, which make them act strange and out of control. Oftentimes, people who abuse drugs or alcohol are in the mental case category because these drugs and alcohol often impair normal mental states. These abusers may generally be nice, sane, wonderful people when they're not involved with drugs or alcohol, but they transform into literal monsters and they often act violent. Mental cases can also change from Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde right in front of your eyes. They're the most difficult people to be around on any level because, like the silent but deadly erupting volcano, you never know where they're coming from. You never know where they stand. Since the percentage of people with mental disorders and alcoholism and drug use is growing exponentially, which is oftentimes helped by the societal stresses such as joblessness and homelessness and destruction of the family unit, it's inevitable that we'll be exposed to more and more toxic mental cases in the future, unfortunately. The BSing liar. They don't know whether they're lying or telling the truth. They lie so much. You can believe only half of what they tell you. The problem is, which half to believe? These people have lied so much and have spun so many yarns to build up such low self-esteem that they end up believing their own lies. They can swear to you on a stack of Bibles that something is a truth, and they tend to believe it wholeheartedly, even when you, in fact, know it's not true. They won't budge because they're the ultimate manipulator. What's most confusing is that the BSing liar sometimes say things that have a ray of truth in them. They often mix a little truth into a little BS to confuse you. They may give you a little incomplete truth, insisting when you call them on their BS that they never lied to you. They're very frustrating to deal with because you can never really trust them and never communicate with them on a real level. Since trust is the key element of communication, it's virtually impossible to respect them or even to relate to them honestly and openly. There are BSing liars that are literally harmless. They just BS to impress or to enhance their self-worth. But sometimes there are BSing liars that manipulate to the degree that they destroy other people's lives as well as their own. They may stick to their story even if there are tons of evidence to show that they're lying. They're very toxic. The meddler. The meddler gets involved in everybody's business. In fact, their business is what's none of their business. They're a cross between the gossip and the instigator, which we'll talk about a little later. They're involved in your life, your business life, your personal life, by physically manipulating it with the aim of making it miserable. They don't just talk about you to others like the gossip does or incite you like the instigator is going to do. Instead, they actually get involved in your life by phoning or setting up meetings with others to tell them about you. Remember that popular 1960s TV show, Bewitched? Well, there was a nosy neighbor named Mrs. Kravitz who was always calling the police or trying to get Samantha, the witch, and her husband, Darren, into some kind of trouble. Well, Mrs. Kravitz is a classic example of a meddler, a snitch, a tattletale who can make your life miserable. In fact, every daytime soap opera has a meddler who tries to seduce someone's husband or break up someone's marriage or take away someone's child. They're always trying to get people in trouble and ruin their lives. Since they don't have much of a life of their own, they'll often try to live vicariously through you as they attempt to manipulate your life. They get a thrill out of doing this. The penny-pinching miser. Oh, these are people of rare gifts, and yes, it's rare that they give a gift. Oh, boy, their pockets are so low that their arms are short. These penny-pinching misers have such low opinions of themselves that they don't even think they deserve anything unless it's cheap or free. They're not only cheap with money, they're cheap with compliments and stingy with love and affection. Their conversations frequently focus on money, how much they paid for certain things, what kind of deal they got, how they bargain people down. They're impressed with their cleverness and haggling. These are petty people who think in such small terms that they often miss the big picture. They're so busy worrying about nickels and dimes that they end up with nickels and dimes of life. These penny-pinching misers will always be the last ones to reach for the check at restaurants. And if they do pay, boy, will they scrutinize every figure on that check, on that bill. They'll haggle with the waiter, even if it's just a few cents over. These penny-pinching misers end up alienating everyone around them. No matter how many good qualities a stingy person has, they're all canceled out. Because as Confucius says, associating with a miserly person is not even worth considering. The fanatic. This is the kind of person who's hard to find, but even harder to lose. They're like summer colds. You just can't get rid of them. They're dogmatic. They're stubborn. They're irritating. They're controlling. They're clinging. They're a zealot. They believe all out in something or someone without any consideration for other points of view. Like the bully or the control freak, it's their way or the highway. They're passionate about what they say, and they reject anyone who doesn't follow their belief system. If you have an opinion of your own or disagree, however mildly, they get angry and they tell you how wrong you are, and they consider you a traitor. You can't have a decent or intelligent conversation with them because they're unwilling to listen to anything any other point of view except their own. They seem to have all the answers and monopolize every discussion. They're inflexible and highly judgmental, and that makes them virtually impossible to have a give-and-take dialogue with. Fanatics are like a dog with a bone. Once they get an idea in their head, they never let it go. Perhaps the most devastating and powerful example of a fanatic was seen in the film Fatal Attraction. The me, myself, and I narcissist. Oh, they like one thing in life, themselves. They're the most self-centered individuals you'll ever encounter. They don't want to talk about anything else that doesn't pertain to them. They want to hear about your issues only if they pertain to them. Their vocabularies are overabundantly supplied with the words me, myself, I. The word I is used, of course, in every sentence. Trying to have a conversation with them can be so frustrating because you never have a give-and-take dialogue with them. Their behavior certainly reflects that famous Hollywood joke where the actor is at a dinner party and he talks to a woman whom he just met and he says to her after talking to her for 3 hours, "Oh my goodness, we've spent the past 3 hours talking about me, my projects, and everything about me. Let's talk about you right now. What do you think about me?" Narcissists constantly chatter about themselves, their children, their spouses, their career, their success. They can be so unnerving, nauseating to someone who realizes that the entire world revolves around them. They're so self-consumed that they become uninteresting bores, and you can't wait to get away from them. This behavior may be acceptable for a 2-year-old, but it certainly is not acceptable for an adult. The Eddie Haskell. Remember Eddie Haskell in Leave It to Beaver? Well, this boy was so sweet and polite and gentlemanly to his teachers and his parents, and of course to Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver, his best friend's parents. But when no one else was around, he was mean and nasty to his best friend's little brother, Beaver. The Eddie Haskell syndrome is the ultimate manipulator. They flatter you to death just to get what they want. They're very manipulative. They lavish you with excessive praise, and they act as though you're their best friend, and they do anything for you. But deep inside, they may not really like you at all. In fact, they'll never let you know about it. They'll never tell you to your face. They're so effusive in their flattery, and when you try to stop them or slough them off, they often get mad and insist that you're the most beautiful, the smartest, the best. Of course, you can't help but smile, but deep inside, you'd love those things to be true, but you know they're not. When you do break into that smile, they know they have you. Watching them in action is disgusting as you see how phony they are, kissing up to anyone who can do them any good. The self-righteous priss. Oh, they think they're so perfect that they can't do anything wrong as they sit there on their high horse, looking down their nose in judgment of you. They're often rigid, uptight, judgmental people who expect others to live by their codes of ethics. For example, they may look down on anyone who smokes or drinks or curses or even has premarital sex or isn't well-groomed or tightly organized as they are. They're usually filled with anger, disdain, and disgust, and they have very little tolerance for others. These perfectionists are finicky, and like the fanatic and the bitchy bossy bully and the control freak, it's their way or the highway. They're extremely difficult to be around and even more difficult to live with because few people can come up to their expectations. They live miserable existences because they can never let go and have fun and relax and smell the roses. Their rigidity is imposed in an attempt to hide the fact that they aren't perfect. And since they are, after all, human beings, subject to human error and desires that threaten their brittle moral framework, they find themselves becoming hypocrites and, in turn, feel ambivalent about themselves, which diminishes their self-worth. The snooty snob. They act as though they're superior to everyone else, but deep down, they feel very inferior to other people. They're trembling with insecurity. They have to drop names and go to the best, chicest, in places in order to feel a sense of self-worth. And if you're not part of the in crowd, they won't even bother to say hello to you. They go around with their noses up in the air, talking to you only if you're cool or hip, and they're condescending and talk down to you if you're not. They're often found in snooty snob clubs, which only let you in if you look right or you're popular or have a lot of money to bribe the doorman with. These people are desperately in need of validation to feel like functioning human beings. They're also very temperamental and insist on getting special attention. In fact, they'll butt in line and get ahead of you and act like a spoiled child with very little regard for anyone else but themselves. This "I'm better than you" attitude exhibits their mask of really "I'm worse than you" inner conviction. They're riddled with insecurity, and they have very fragile egos. Sometimes a snooty snob has no money at all, but they have positions that place them in contact with the rich and famous. This is most evident in certain places in this country, where an assistant to somebody important may assume the vicarious role and have an "I'm better than you" persona. The competitor. They see every occasion as an opportunity to outwit or out-surpass you. Everything is competition, from getting a job to getting a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife. Let's say you tell the competitor a story about how great your dog is. Well, they'll tell you a story about their dog, how much bigger their dog is and smarter and better. You tell them how hard you work today, and boy, they'll surpass your story by telling you how hard they worked, despite the multitude of obstacles they had to overcome. There's no relaxing around a competitor. You always feel that they're ready to pounce. They're generally ready to make that negative comment and have a negative attitude about others because they're so busy competing with them. Let's say you make a comment that a mutual friend looks particularly attractive today. Well, the competitor may result, "Well, I've seen her look better. Actually, I think she's worn out. Look at those circles under her eyes." Competitors tend to be show-offs and braggarts who gloat about their achievements, both past and present. They constantly try to impress you with how much better they are than you. But the truth is, they have such low self-esteem that the only way they can relate to you is by turning everything into a contest. The control freak. The control freak can never let go. They're usually not team players and have difficulty delegating authority. They try to do everything themselves. If things don't go their way, boy, do they get angry or lose interest, or they feel that they must orchestrate every move. They set themselves up for a life filled with failure, for frustration, disappointment, by never going with the flow. Instead, they force things to happen when things don't go their way. They're so rigid, and they panic, and they become even angrier and even more manipulative. Control freaks literally freak out if things don't go their way and if they're out of control. The irony about dealing with a control freak is they can't really control themselves, so they try to control others and everyone else around them, every situation. They're people who punch holes in walls with their fists when things don't go their way. They're very immature. They have no concept that if you hold on to others so tightly, the other person can't move. And if you do hold on that tight, they'll break away from you emotionally or physically. They don't even think of the concept of the butterfly, because if you hold it too tight, its wings will break, so you end up destroying its beauty as well as its life. The accusing critic. They make you feel wrong in order to make themselves feel right. They criticize you directly to your face. They try to convince you that you're less than a person that can never do anything aright. They're like bad parents. They're always admonishing and accusing their children, even when it's not deserved. Instead of asking you, they accuse you. They do this to gain power and control, much like the control freak. In essence, they feel that it's their duty to find something wrong and to let you know how harsh and critical and attacking they are. They often make accusatory statements like, "You're the reason why we were late," or "You didn't get the job because it's all your fault." Accusing critics are so demanding of perfection that they're never satisfied. Much like the self-righteous priss, the accusing critic is constantly frustrated and trying to make an imperfect world perfect. The critic lashes out at you by invalidating everything about you, taking the joy out of every situation, looking for the negative, even in something so insignificant as what you choose to eat for dinner. If you're around these accusing critics for any length of time, you will end up physically ill because they are the most difficult toxic terror to stomach. The arrogant know-it-all. Arrogant know-it-alls don't know anything at all when it comes to dealing with people. Though they may seem to know everything and have all the self-confidence in the world, they're literally very insecure people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to let everyone else know how smart they are and how much information they have stored in their brain. Arrogant know-it-alls usually talk at you, not with you. In fact, they often act as though by talking to you, they're doing you a favor. They enjoy using big words and are very quick to put down your ideas. Their condescending tone makes you feel like a dummy, while they in turn feel smarter. Another tactic of the arrogant know-it-all is to overwhelm you with data and information. You don't have a chance to even compete with them, much less talk about anything intelligently. Since they know it all, they can't ever be open-minded enough to learn more, especially if you're the one talking to them. Emotional refrigerators. Emotional refrigerators express only one thing, aloofness. They use cold silence, the way the bitchy bossy bully uses threats. They're reserved and secretive, much like the silent but deadly erupting volcano, except the emotional refrigerator never erupts. You don't know how they're really feeling, as you never get a true reading from their voice or their body language. You never know if they're happy or they're sad. They usually have a vacant or a dull look in their eyes, and they're rarely expressive of what they feel. Though they may be able to do their jobs well, anyone who gets involved emotionally with an emotional refrigerator on a personal level is headed for disappointment. They're so emotionally unresponsive that it becomes terribly frustrating to deal with them. They refuse to tell you what's wrong or why they're so quiet. They often use their silence as a form of manipulation to intimidate you. They get pleasure out of seeing how uncomfortable you are with their silence, and that comforts them. They may have the same emotions as you, but sharing them with you would make them feel as though they've lost their power over you. In essence, they keep you wondering about what's going on inside of them. The skeptical paranoid. They never believe a word that anybody says without proof. Even if they see it or they hear it, they still don't believe it. They often have doubting looks on their faces and usually seem to be hesitating as they throw cold water on every single idea you have. They're the ultimate pessimists and non-believers. Before anything happens, they're convinced that it'll never work, much like the gloom and doom victim. They're extremely difficult to be around because they're so suspicious and they feel that everyone's against them. Trust is not what they do best, and as a result, it's very difficult to get close to someone who's a skeptical paranoid because they doubt your intentions and your sincerity, and they're always questioning you. In essence, they think that you're trying to plot against them in some way. The instigator. Instigators are interferers who like to make trouble for other people. They want to make you stick your neck out so they can be entertained if it's chopped off. But unlike the meddler, instigators don't get directly involved. Instead, they egg other people on, perhaps knowing full well that what they advise is very wrong. Perhaps their own lives are so miserable and so dull that the only way they can generate some excitement is by verbally stirring up the waters in other people's lives. They'll often communicate with innuendos such as, "Oh, I'm sure your husband is completely devoted to you, even though he spent the afternoon with his secretary the other day," or, "I'm not one to pry, but isn't Robert supposed to be working for you exclusively? I saw him doing something for three other people in the office." Instigators have no regard for anyone but themselves or anything but their own entertainment. They're alarmists who get a thrill out of manipulating people in situations and making mountains out of molehills. Instigators instigate in order to gain control and achieve a sense of importance in their small little lives. Manipulating the actions of others makes them feel powerful because they stir people up. They try to provoke negative actions. Instigators are among the worst troublemakers out there. They may twist the truth or goad people into doing things they wouldn't ordinarily do. They ignite the fire and they fan the flames, and then they enjoy watching the glow from a distance. Instigators are also tattletales who spread stories about people in order to get them into trouble. Like gossips, they can never keep a secret. But unlike true gossips, they'll often make up a story in order to manipulate others. They seem to live for making trouble in other people's lives. In essence, they're the little devils trying to make the worst out of every situation. Have you seen people you recognize in any of these descriptions of toxic terrors? Have you identified anyone in particular, perhaps whom you live with or work with or used to be friends with or lovers with? Perhaps you've identified somebody you were married to or are still married to. Maybe you've even seen yourself in many of these descriptions. You may have noticed, too, that many of the toxic terrors share several traits with other toxic terrors, even though each toxic terror is unique and possesses their own specific characteristics. Often a particular toxic person whom you know may embody more than one toxic type. For example, they may be a gossip and a control freak, or a cut-you-downer and a smiling, two-faced backstabber. After hearing about these toxic terrors, you should now be equipped to understand exactly why you feel so negatively about those people. Dealing with a toxic terror is, as an attorney friend of mine once said, is like tasting a teaspoon of battery acid. In the next chapter, you'll learn how to neutralize these battery acid people so they become less toxic to your system. Now we're going to learn 10 techniques for handling toxic people. The first technique is the tension blowout technique. This technique underlies all of the others because it helps you to gain physical control over your emotions. What happens when someone upsets you? When you're so angry that you could spit nails, your adrenaline starts to flow, your heart beats faster, your head begins to throb, and your face reddens and eyes begin to bulge as you hold on to your breath. Using the tension blowout technique helps you to oxygenate yourself immediately and serves as a vehicle for releasing your tension and regaining your body's homeostatic balance. It allows you to gain oxygen and release carbon dioxide in a controlled, systematic way. Here's the sequence. First, take a breath in through your mouth for 2 seconds. Then hold on to that breath for 3 seconds as you think of that toxic person. Keep thinking of the person as you literally blow him or her out of your system with all your might until you have run out of air. Then stop for 2 seconds and do not breathe. Once again, take a breath in through your mouth for 2 seconds. Hold on to that breath for 3 seconds as you think about that toxic person, and then keep thinking of that person as you literally blow him or her out of your system with all your might until you've run out of air. Now stop for 2 seconds and don't breathe. Then let your air in and out. You may feel a little bit lightheaded after you've done this technique, but don't worry, it's normal. If you become dizzy, you may want to sit down and start inhaling and exhaling slowly in rhythmic breaths. In any case, you should feel a lot less tense and angry. And if not, you've got to repeat this procedure until the anger at that toxic person has left you. The tension blowout technique is a great technique to use when someone annoys you or just plain irritates you. Releasing the air can often release you from excessive irritation. The calming effect of this technique is also helpful in preventing you from sticking your foot in your mouth and saying the wrong thing. That first held inhalation gives you an extra few seconds to think before you react. The next technique is the humor technique. You can not only release tension, but amuse yourself in the process. How often do you think of a clever response to a toxic comment hours and hours later? How many times have you lain relaxed in your bed at night and mulled over an incident and then mentally beat yourself up because you didn't say what you really wanted to say at the time? With the humor technique, you can respond at once and achieve the additional benefit of laughter. Use the tension blowout technique and then you hold in your breath, think of something amusing to say. It doesn't matter if it sounds stupid to the other person as long as it's funny to you. I used this technique at a dinner party when I was sitting next to this obnoxious gentleman who bragged about himself nonstop. He told me that he was such a great singer and he never made it big time, so he made his living as a singing teacher. Throughout the dinner, he kept trying to impress me with his knowledge of opera, which really meant very little to me because I didn't know that much about opera. But I was gracious, and I smiled, and I listened. And suddenly, I reached over to get my second piece of delicious cheese-laden garlic bread. And then he glared at me, and in his harsh, clipped tone, he said, "You know, I just lost 15 pounds, and you should do the same." I was in shock. I couldn't believe what I heard. I started to feel a tinge of guilt, but then I thought, oh no, I can't be eating that much. I immediately took my breath in, and then I held it, and I thought to myself, oh no, 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 the tension blowout technique isn't working here. I'm getting angrier by the minute, so what I need to do is have some fun with this man. Maybe I can play with his mind and have a good time. So I decided to goof on him a little and say something to him related to opera. So I looked him straight in the eye, and I feigned surprise, and I said, lose weight? I want to gain 70 pounds. In fact, my aim is to look like one of those opera singers, you know, the ones with the big horns on their head with the long braids, la, 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 la. all. And then I took another bite out of that wonderful garlic bread. Well, the rest of the evening, he certainly didn't say a word to me, which was my intention, and I had a little giggle and I felt great. I had released all the tension of having to deal with this toxic person through humor, poking fun at something he could relate to, opera. The humor technique can also be used to save your self-esteem and enhance you in the eyes of others. Juan was a new kid in school who'd been born with a cleft lip and palate, and his nose was flat, and he had an upper lip that was scarred and speech that was rather nasal. He was taunted unmercifully by the older boys in the schoolyard until one day an older boy pushed him and shoved him and said, "Hey, what's that ugly scar on your face?" Well, Juan looked the boy right in the eye, and he said, "Oh, that scar, that's when I cut myself shaving a while ago." Well, the other boys started to laugh at the absurdity of a 9-year-old boy shaving. His humor endeared him to the other children. Early on in life, Juan learned that laughter and humor was a ticket out of his problems. He used the humor technique to make fun of himself and to joke about others, and soon he became the most popular boy in his class, and the next semester, he was voted class president. The third technique is a stop the thought technique. Sometimes you may be so angry at a person that you feel as though you're going to explode. Every time you think of the individual or his actions or her actions, you are overwhelmed with negative emotion. In this case, you not only need to do the tension blowout technique, but when you blow out, you need to yell, "Stop the thought!" Every time you think of that person or the situation, you have to hear yourself saying, "Stop the thought," either out loud or quietly to yourself. This technique can be a lifesaver. You may wake up feeling great and your day is going along just fine, and then all of a sudden that ugly thought comes into your head and your spunky mood turns sour as you relive that toxic moment. Soon you find yourself becoming even more irate as you beat yourself up for not saying what you should have said, for getting involved with that toxic person in the first place. In fact, that's what happened to one of my clients. She had a bad breakup with her boyfriend and she still couldn't shake that nightmare of their toxic relationship. Because she thought about it so often during the day, her nightmare could recur at any hour, 24 hours a day. They'd broken up 6 months earlier, but she just couldn't seem to shake the negative thoughts that put her deeper and deeper into depression. When I taught her this stop the thought technique, it literally turned her life around, because finally she was able to gain some control over her life. Whenever she thought about her boyfriend, she screamed out, "Stop the thought!" Then her moods improved, and she got on with her life. The mirror technique. This is a technique that forces people to see their behavior reflected back to them. One of my clients, who's an attorney, found this technique to be invaluable during her negotiations with a verbally hostile and abusive attorney. Apparently, he wouldn't let her get a word in edgewise, and he yelled whenever she spoke. He shouted obscenities to her, in fact. One day, during a telephone conversation, she held the receiver away from her ear, and she began to bark like a dog. The man stopped in his tracks. "What did you say?" Well, my client returned the phone to her ear and said, "That's exactly what you sound like, a barking dog." Now, you and I are both well-trained, highly qualified, civilized professionals, so let's act that way and speak intelligently to one another. The other attorney was certainly embarrassed because he had no idea how he was really coming across. He then resorted to becoming the civilized gentleman that he was. When you use the mirror technique, you don't have to beat someone over the head with their ugly behavior. Instead, you just need to give them a glimpse of how ugly they're behaving so they can immediately change their actions. The mirror technique also works with children quite well because they can see the consequences of their own behavior. The direct confront technique. This technique is excellent to use when someone makes a nasty or biting comment to you. If you can't think of something funny or clever or recall a comeback from the humor technique, you might want to tell that person boldly and honestly how you feel about what he or she said to you. This direct confront technique prevents you from becoming the victim because others will usually respect you for speaking up and saying what's on your mind. When you directly confront someone, it's essential that you project your voice so that you can be heard in a well-modulated tone. You also can use emotion in your voice so you can make an even greater impression of conviction and confidence. When you use this technique, it not only causes others to respect you, but allows you to gain more self-respect as you say what you mean and you mean what you say. The calm questioning technique. This calm questioning technique lets toxic people see just how absurd or ridiculous or stupid their ideas or comments have been. As you take one through a series of questions that only require yes or no answers and a logical progression, you become like a courtroom lawyer who's trying to make an important point by having a witness respond to a succession of these questions. When you use this technique, it's important that you speak calmly and sound as though you're in control and not allow your emotions to take over. Basically, you're leading an ignorant person through a line of questioning where they're forced to think about the implications of what they said and explore their own feelings that underlie that ridiculous statement that they made. This technique is also very powerful if you do it well, because you not only get your points across, but you can even change other people's way of thinking by presenting another viewpoint based on the questions they have to answer and be accountable for. You're not talking to them, but rather working out answers with them. And by speaking and commentating, they become more active parts of the communication process. The technique can also help you to acquire more information about a person or a situation, and then you know where you stand or what the real story is. The give 'em hell and yell technique. We've all been taught that it's not ladylike or gentlemanly to get angry or scream or yell or lose your temper. Well, that's nonsense, because sometimes you have to scream and you have to yell because it's the only way you can be heard. Sometimes you get so mad that the only thing you can possibly do to let off steam so that you don't end up with a cerebral hemorrhage is to yell at the person and really let him have it. Sometimes you might even use profanity or curse because it's the only way to release your anger. And as Mark Twain once said, under certain circumstances, profanity provides a relief denied even to prayer. Although I wouldn't recommend a steady diet of it because that would turn you into a toxic person yourself. But sometimes profanity can help you get your point across. Four-letter words may not be socially acceptable, but they may be the only words that toxic people will even listen to as you shock them into listening to you. The give 'em love and kindness technique. We've all heard the phrase, turn the other cheek when someone does us wrong, but it may be one of the most difficult things to do, especially if you subscribe to the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth philosophy. Earlier, I spoke to you about the root of all toxicity being identified as jealousy due to insecurity and lack of self-esteem. It's often the case that toxic people have received insufficient love in their life, or perhaps they were abused. The only way to handle such people may be through understanding, love, and kindness. It takes a lot of inner strength and a lot of compassion to turn your anger into love and kindness. Your first instinct may be to hit that person back even harder than you were hit verbally. Remember the old saying, kill 'em with kindness? Well, by means of giving them the love and kindness technique, you can instead love them with kindness and help them improve their own self-esteem. In using this technique, it's important to keep in mind that no matter how ugly or nasty or hateful sounding a person is towards you, you must never lose control. You've got to be calm and use a soothing, friendly, loving tone, and you also have to smile. How do you do this in the face of so much negativity? Well, just keep remembering how much pain that person must be in, how empty and unloved that person must be feeling inside, and how much self-hatred they have. As you put out love and kindness, it's amazing what behavioral changes you start to see in the other person. Their tone will often soften and their body language will loosen up, and they may even end up smiling and saying nice things back to you. After all, a pat on the back is only a few vertebrae removed from a kick in the pants and may be more effective in getting the results that you want. The vicarious fantasy technique. This technique can help you release a lot of tension by giving you a little laugh or a giggle as you use your imagination and figure out what you'd really like to do to that person. But the operative word here is fantasy. It means it's not a reality, so you don't actually put these thoughts into action. You don't want to harm anyone. Perhaps you visualize your boss's head being pummeled as you watch a heavyweight boxing fight. You release a lot of your anger and the horrible feelings that you harbor towards that toxic person. This technique can involve drawing some ugly pictures of these toxic people and mutilating them on paper. You can even take their photo and draw horns or vampire teeth on them or make them cross-eyed. You can rip up the drawing or burn the photo or spit on it or stamp on it, all the time fantasizing what you'd like to do to that person in the picture. There are people who are so toxic to you that you wish them physical harm. Even though it's not politically correct or socially or legally acceptable, and definitely not religiously acceptable, The reality is that we do have these thoughts from time to time, and they are normal. But they cease to be normal when we're no longer able to engage in fantasy and we cross that line to inappropriate boundaries. So we must never, 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 never harm another person physically. And you can save your life by releasing anger against the other person and save that person's life as well, because you don't have to act out your fantasies. The sheer fantasy is enough to satisfy your revenge. At one time or another, we've all used this vicarious fantasy technique unknowingly. I know, how often have we laughed with excitement when we see our screen heroes kick someone's behind, watch wrestling matches, and deep down gives us a thrill as we picture the person for just even a split second, that toxic enemy who's being pummeled. Watching our heroes or athletes beat someone up in fantasy or in a controlled environment is safe and healthy in terms of releasing our own aggression. There are no negative repercussions such as going to jail or getting maimed or even getting killed yourself. But the next time you want to let your anger out on someone in a safe way, you may want to use this vicarious fantasy technique and picture that person's face being beaten up by your favorite superstar on video or on the big screen. It may sound sadistic, but it's definitely safer than doing it yourself. And it's also an excellent way to release the hurt and the anger inside of you that could actually destroy you. Once again, I have to make it clear that the vicarious fantasy technique is only a fantasy. You can fantasize about punching the person out. You can fantasize about slapping their face. You can fantasize about anything. But you must never let this fantasy cross the line over into reality. Otherwise, the consequences are disastrous. The unplug technique. This technique should be reserved for the most severely of toxic people, those whom you can no longer deal with. When you've tried every other technique to no avail and there's nothing you can do, you have to let them go. Visualize yourself unplugging from them, just like you'd unplug from an electric socket. You have to become empty of emotion as far as they're concerned. You have to completely let go and not care what happens to them. Don't care if they live or they die or they're happy or they're sad. Don't wish them evil and don't even wish them well either. Just let them out of your life for good and never look back. Sometimes you can unplug from a toxic person, not because you don't like that person, but because you do like them. You may need to unplug from them as a form of tough love, where you set limits and let the person handle the situation themselves so that you won't end up becoming codependent and contributing to their toxic behavior. Sometimes you can use the unplug technique for a limited amount of time. Sometimes if enough time has gone by, the person can realize what they've done and tempers can settle and you can get back to the relationship. There are techniques that you must never, ever use. Number one, never self-destruct. Never turn your anger at another person inward through using alcohol or drugs or even overeating. Never take your life because you think there's no hope. That is unacceptable. There are ways to deal with toxic people, and taking your life is not one of them. If you ever have thoughts of ending it all, call a suicide hotline in your community immediately or get professional help immediately, because nobody should drive you to the point where you're considering ending it all. Two, never use physical violence, as we talked about earlier. Repeatedly, I've said this to you, and it's important that you get this into your mind. Never take the law into your own hands. There are other alternatives in dealing with toxic people in your life. Using verbal fists, not actual fists. Nobody has the right to hurt another person physically, and if it should happen to us, we need to leave that person or seek appropriate legal channels for protection. Nobody ever needs to be a victim again. There's no excuse for any kind of physical violence whatsoever. Number three, never take hostages. Never use a child or any other person to get back at someone who's toxic to you. Unfortunately, it's all too common, especially in divorce proceedings, but the results can be devastating. You can't destroy an innocent person's life by using him or her to deal with your own anger against another toxic person. And finally, don't stick around and try to get that person to like you. You can't convince anyone to like you, so stop driving someone crazy and yourself crazy by trying to win their affections. If a relationship's over, let go. Don't be obsessive and never stalk anyone in a fatal attraction relationship. If you have trouble letting go, seek professional help immediately. Now that you've learned the 10 techniques to deal with toxic terrors, we're going to find out which technique is best suited to use with specific toxic terrors. When you choose the best techniques to use and communicate and cope with a toxic person, you have to consider two things. First, you have to identify the individual's specific toxic terror type, as certain techniques are more effective with certain toxic terrors than others. And secondly, you have to know what role that toxic terror plays in your life. The cut you downer. Because the cut you downer is among the most insecure of all of the toxic terrors, they're best handled with using the calm questioning technique, or giving them the love and kindness technique. When you use the calm questioning technique, it's important to remember that you should never use a whiny or an argumentative tone, because that makes people more defensive in their actions and creates more obnoxious behavior. When you use the calm questioning technique with the cut you downer, it's important to ask them questions such as, why would you make a comment like that? Or why would you say something like that? This cuts to the bone. So now your cut you downer has to account for their own toxic behavior, since you haven't let them get away with it. Now, when people cut you down, it's often because they have something that you want or that you represent. So in most cases, they feel very inadequate around you. So an alternative method is to give them that love and kindness and focus on compassion, because it'll make it easier for you to deal with them. Dealing with the chatterbox. The first method to use with the chatterbox is that tension blowout technique that allow you to keep your cool so you don't end up yelling, shut up, shut up, shut up. You may end up doing this anyway with the vicarious fantasy techniques. But chatterbox need to be told that their constant talking is inappropriate. So the direct confront technique may be very effective. It's best to use this technique when you're not in the presence of other people, because chatterbox need to be able to save face and preserve their dignity. After all, the reason that they're chatting away is because they want to feel loved and accepted and important. That's why it's important to incorporate the give them love and kindness technique. You may want to start out by telling the chatterboxes kindly and politely how much you like them, if you do, of course, but that sometimes they talk too much and talk about things that may not interest everyone. Encourage chatterboxes to read others' facial and body language cues in order to determine if people are interested in hearing what they have to say. At first, chatterboxes may be shocked and even go on the defensive, but if they do, you need to use more direct, specific examples of their inappropriate chatterboxing. You may even have to keep reassuring them that you're on their side. Offer even to give them a gesture, like a raised eyebrow or a touch or a cue that they should stop talking, to help them be able to control their talking behavior. If chatterboxes still don't get it, or they continue to monopolize your time and energy, you have to become more straightforward and use the direct confront technique, because you have to firmly set limits so that you won't be manipulated. Dealing with the self-destroyer. These people are filled with so much self-hatred that they're best approached by giving them love and kindness. They need to be spoken to with love and kindness, because they probably got little of it while they were growing up. Otherwise, they wouldn't have ended up being the way they are. Self-destroyers aren't just hungry for food or alcohol or cigarettes or sex. They're starved for attention and acceptance. Sometimes you have to use tough love with the self-destroyer. You have to put your foot down and set limits using the direct confront technique. There are times when you can't sit by any longer and watch these people destroy themselves. It's just too painful to see. In that case, the unplug technique can be your best choice of survival. When you've loved someone and been brutally honest with them, letting the person know that you're aware of their problem and you've offered them help, all in vain, you have to unplug and let the person deal with the problem alone and in their own way. You can never help self-destroyers unless they're willing to help themselves. Like the old adage says, if you hang out with dogs, you'll get fleas. If you hang out with the self-destroyer, you can be destroyed. Therefore, give them love and kindness, but if it fails, unplug. dealing with the runner. To communicate with runners, you first have to catch them, preferably before they run away. The first thing to try with runners is the direct confront technique. Don't think of how uncomfortable it may seem for them. That's not your concern. Instead, you have to let them know that you're on to their weakness of running away from their problems. You have to do this directly. Usually runners aren't used to being confronted, so when you confront them, they'll often listen and begin to act. Of course, they may end up running away anyway, as the issue may be just too difficult for them to handle. If you confront the runner and he or she still runs, you should never regret confronting them, because at least now you'll know whose behavior is wrong. Just remember that when this person runs, it has very little to do with you. Dealing with the silent but deadly erupting volcano. The only method to use with this scary type of toxic terror is the calm questioning technique. You need to question them because they certainly will never volunteer and tell you what's going on in their minds. You need to keep calm and get feedback from them periodically. Ask if they're okay with doing something you ask them to do. Ask open-ended questions that require more than just a yes or no response. That way you force them to interact with you so that you can monitor their thoughts and their feelings. Every time you get a silent but deadly erupting volcano to talk, you're diffusing that walking time bomb. For example, you can ask, "Did you feel overworked today?" Or, "What was your reaction to that call?" Or, "What was your opinion about what the boss said today?" "What's your reaction to the problems we're having at work?" Ask questions continually. Dealing with the gossip. Gossips are extremely dangerous because they can make your life a living nightmare. Gossips need to know right away that you're well aware of who they are and what they're trying to do. Use the direct confront technique and tell them that their behavior is unacceptable, especially if they've gossiped about you. If they've gossiped about someone you know or you like, cut them off by saying, "I'm not going to listen to this," or "I don't believe a word of this," or "I'm not interested." You may want to use the humor technique with a comeback, such as, "Do you know what they did to people who gossiped in medieval times? They would put an iron mask on their head and lock them with a key." Come to think of it, you might look pretty good in one of those masks. Maybe I can find one for you. Like the instigator, gossips are so insecure and have such low self-esteem that they dish up the latest dirt to feel